So, good afternoon. My name is Sharon Ravid, and I work at the Boston University School of Public Health in the Office of Public Health Practice, and my role is a program manager, and I wear many hats, but the hat I'm talking about today is being part of the training team that creates our online trainings. My title today is Using Online Training to Address Issues of Workforce Development. I have no relationships, financial relationships to disclose, but I should say that there is a very large team behind me that works on developing these modules and no financial relationships. So I should say that a lot of this work is going to be published in the journal Health Promotion Practice in a supplemental issue that's going to come out in March, as well as much of it was also recognized as a NATRO model practice this year. So, like our online modules, my talk today has learning objectives, and you can see them up on the screen, to explain the advantages of internet-based training, to be able to name program area competencies that were identified here in Massachusetts, as well as to be able to describe an evaluation strategy. The hope is by the end of my talk that you could do some of these, and we'd measure this in our online modules as well, though I will not test you today. So, in case you were not at yesterday's opening ceremony, I just want to say welcome to Massachusetts, my home. We were one of the original 13 colonies, and one of the things that has continued with us since then is our strong commitment to home rule. So, as you can see from this complicated map, we have 351 cities and towns throughout the state, which means we have 351 local boards of health or departments of public health. So every community, large and small, has their own. They range from Boston, which has the Boston Public Health Commission has probably over 1,000 employees, to some of the smaller communities, particularly in the western part of the state, where you're lucky if you have one part-time public health nurse. And both of those are responsible for the same kinds of regulations to be met. We also don't really train our public health workforce. Lots of people join the public health workforce, and they can range from anything from an associate's degree to doctors, PhDs, MPHs, and everything in between. We don't train them very well in the regulatory areas, so things like housing and wastewater and retail food safety, things that they need to know in their day-to-day regulatory work. So how are we going to address those issues? We developed a plan to first identify our audience and figure out exactly who it is are we trying to reach. Because there are so many people, you can't reach everybody with the same target. And we also wanted to think about what do they need to know. Public health, as we know, is a wide field. Even the regulatory area is a wide field. What is it that we're going to teach them, and how are we going to try to reach them? So in 2010, the local Public Health Institute of Massachusetts, in conjunction with the six public health professional associations, came out with their competency report. And what that report showed was that there are certain competencies that you need to know to be effective in Massachusetts. And they established two levels of competency, the awareness level and the performance level. So the awareness level is just what it sounds like. It's to know that this topic exists, to be familiar with it, that it's something out there, while the performance level is about skills and being able to do something. How do we fill all those gaps? Well, when you have it's not such a big state, but we tend to think of it as pretty big. I know many of you come from states much bigger than us. But without travel budgets, traveling is impossible. And if you're that one public health nurse and you're responsible for a community or four, your time out of the office is precious. And if you want to take a vacation, it's hard enough to fill your shoes. But if you want to go across the state for a three-day training, no one's left to do the work. So online training was a way to be able to fill that. You can do our trainings from home. You could do them at 10 a.m. during the business day at your desk. You can do them at 10 p.m. in your jammies on your couch. We also are able to offer contact hours, so many of these people need to maintain their certifications anyway, and we offer it all for free. Once these are developed, we don't have to pay an instructor to give another webinar, so they're fairly cost-effective as well. And many of these topics really loan themselves to online training and to trying something different. They've been done in the classroom many times, and they can sort of be snooze fests. So these are the 17 program area competencies that the report outlined. The ones in blue are topics that we already have developed online trainings for and are available live on our website. You can go there right now. The ones in brown are the ones that we have them in development. So we've got 10 that are completed and 7 that are on the way. Though we do address many of these competencies through other trainings that our center does. We just don't have the online ones yet, but we will. These are the 10 cross-cutting competencies that the report outlined. And many of these look familiar. They mimic other competencies that you've seen. Two of the topics, for example, emergency preparedness and legal issues, have their own standalone modules and standalone topics. The rest, because they are cross-cutting, show up again and again. So you're going to see health education or communication in lots of different modules. So who's our target audience? We're looking at the local public health workforce. And generally, those tend to be the health inspectors, the public health nurses, the directors, agents, and commissioners, depending on where you are, you call them different things, the sanitarians, the compliance officers. And these are the people that really are doing the on-the-ground work of the enforcement of these health and environmental regulations in Massachusetts. But what we really found was that our audience was everyone in public health. Once we got these modules up and running, we saw that we were getting all kinds of people taking them. We saw that students were using them. We found out we suddenly one day had an uptick in the number of technical assistance emails and phone calls we were getting. It turns out a professor at some other university had done a Google search and had found our orientation module and had offered it as a prerequisite or a requirement for students in his class, but he gave them the wrong link. And so all of them are trying to get in, and they can't. So our modules are getting out there far beyond what we had expected. We have people in private industry who use our modules. So people in pest management or wastewater have looked at them. We've had school nurses. We've had elected officials, so elected Board of Health members, elected mayors, and other members of local government, concerned citizens, and lots of people in other states, too. While these were all developed with a Massachusetts framework and use Massachusetts regulations, a bed bug is a bed bug is a bed bug, and they can be customizable for other states. Every state's regulations may differ slightly, but the concept is the same, and we're happy to share our modules with other states, and they're also available if someone wants to make them more unique to, say, Connecticut or New Mexico. So these are the 22 modules that we currently have available online. We've split them up into four groups. There are 9 more modules that are currently in development, so this is not a complete list. The four groups are the introductory modules, which really are that first step into public health. We have the orientation and law and legal issues. And a lot of these we've seen, like our orientation module and the professor with the wrong link, have been used by other courses. We also tend to use them internally as prerequisites for other courses that we offer through other modalities. We offer some online, some in-person trainings and others. The majority of our online modules are in the program areas, and these pretty closely mirror the competencies that I showed you earlier. A couple have been split up. We also have a good number in emergency preparedness. It's an issue that our office and the state has taken very seriously, so we have trainings specifically towards emergency preparedness, as well as some additional modules that we created somewhat by request. So, for example, here in the Northeast, mosquitoes and Lyme disease and ticks are a big problem, so we developed a module exclusively about Lyme disease. We offer our modules 3 ways, and this is a modified version of what you'd see on the homepage for any of our individual modules. The first is probably the most popular. It's about taking it self-paced on your take it at your speed, and when you first enter the module, you go to a pretest. You get quizzed on some of the stuff. Hopefully you don't know anything. Then you take the module, and at the end you get a post-test as well as a satisfaction survey. Assuming you complete all those steps, we can then grant you through the system a certificate of completion, and you can use that for your contact hours. So that's one way. The second way is as an online resource. You can go into the module without those pre and post tests and just look for information. What we found is that a lot of times our partners will know that there's a module on a topic, like say hoarding, but find out that suddenly they have a hoarding problem. They get a phone call to their health department, they've got an issue, and oh yeah, there's that thing about it that I need to remember. You can just look it up as an online resource. It's there anytime. You can find out whatever regulation you need. The third thing we offer is a facilitator's guide. Not everyone likes online training. Not everyone wants to sit in front of a computer. So you can get together in a small group of people, though we have heard of this being turned into a full classroom session, and use the facilitator's guide to walk through the module. And we offer additional activities and discussion questions that are better used by a small group. But this way, you can use it in person as well. So the development process is multi-step. The topics that we talk about, that we create modules about, usually have to do with those competencies. So we have the topics already, but once we've picked which one we're going to focus on, the first step is to identify a subject matter expert. We need somebody who knows what they're talking about. And we also need someone who can work with us. It can be somewhat of a time commitment. We generally look to our local and state experts, the people who are on the ground doing this, who have an expertise in a given topic. Once we pick them, we work with them to develop the content. You know, what regulations are important? How do we teach this? What's important to know about it? And we also then put it into the software that we use called SoftChalk. We add interactivity, and I think this is the key component of our modules, which makes them so user-friendly. Nobody wants to sit in front of a computer reading a PowerPoint. Nobody wants to sit in front of a computer listening to an hour-long recording from 3 years ago of some guy talking about something that has no relevance to you. Even if you wanted the topic, even if you chose it, if you're going to spend an hour or two of your life in front of a computer, it may as well be something you're doing actively rather than just passively receiving. So we add things like photo albums, video clips, quizzes, games, did you know, fun factoids, little things so that way you're clicking and you're looking at it and you're not just sitting back and waiting for it to come to you. We then create the additional components, so the pre-post test, the facilitator's guide, the web page where it's going to live. And then we edit. We have a huge, extensive editing process. It's vetted by people internal in our office, different faculty, different members of the Office of Public Health Practice. It's vetted by the subject matter expert who created it to make sure we get the facts right. It's vetted by our advisory committee to make sure that they're our reality check, because the advisory committee is made up of people on the ground who are in local public health who really are our initial audience, and they send us back their comments. We have it go through a copy editor to make sure we've dotted all our I's and crossed all our T's and spelled Massachusetts correctly every time. Once it goes through all those edits, it finally does get approved and the final product gets published on our website. We then will market it through our newsletter, through the website. We work with lots of different partners. We make sure everybody knows that we have a new module. We generally come up with new modules and publish them about one or two a quarter, though that varies a little bit. We always have them in different stages of publication and through the process at any given time. The last two steps are continual. So we are always evaluating our modules as well as doing a content review. I'll speak about the evaluation in a moment, but the content review, we do twice a year link checks. What we found is a lot of times we'll link to our partners in the federal government, in the state government. One organization changes their website and doesn't tell us, and half the links break. Nobody likes broken links. We also review the content in the modules itself. Regulations change, research changes, newest, latest, and greatest come out. And that review happens about once a year, though we may be moving to once every other year for each module. So the evaluation itself, we evaluate really two things. The first is when people log onto our website to take a module for credit and for the certificate and do the pre-post test, we do collect a little bit of demographic data. We really want to know, who are you? What kind of public health role do you fulfill? And where are you? Mostly we're interested for our funders in where in the state are you, but we're also curious, where in the world are you? But it's also key to making sure we are filling those gaps and getting back to that target audience, and are we teaching the right people the right stuff? We also do look at the results from the pre-post tests and the satisfaction survey. So what we find is that most people do better on the post-test than on the pre-test. Yay, they learned. As well as we look at their perception as to achieve the learning objectives. So do they feel like they can do that stuff better after the module than before? And did they even like it? So the last full year we have evaluation data for, which goes from July 1st, 2012 through June 30th, 2013, we issued 944 certificates of completion. So 944 different people took various of our modules and got their certificate. And from those, we found that for each individual module, rates varied, but no module got lower than a 4.0 on the satisfaction survey on a scale of 1 to 5. So people generally seem to be liking it, and they seem to be getting their certificates. And we're always reviewing these results. We found, you know, if people aren't doing better on the post-test, is it because of the test? Is it because we're not teaching it in the module? And over time, we've modified both. We've seen both problems, and we have fixed them. But we're always looking to improve the content and improve what's in there. So I've talked about some of the challenges that we've had in developing the modules. I think the first and foremost is finding those subject matter experts. It can be time-consuming, and people are really busy, especially that one public health nurse responsible for four communities. But the opposite problem has existed as well, which is the too many cooks problem, that you involve so many people, particularly in the editing process, that it can get hung up. And, you know, we try to make sure that we have 100% approval, that everybody on the team is happy with the final product before it goes out. We've had technical issues on our side. No software is perfect. You're always going to have those glitches. The plus side of the software we use is, while it can be annoying for us on the development side, it's very easy on the user side. There isn't a lot of technical know-how. You just click on it, it opens up, and you go. And you don't need to know what's happening behind it to make it all work. It just does for you, at least. Because there's so many people involved, the time is also a challenge. We've had modules go from beginning to end in about 4 months. We've had them take up to a year as well. It just depends on where in the process it can get stuck. Part of my job is to get it unstuck and figure out where it is, and let's keep this going forward. Modules that are stuck in our development process are useless to the public health workforce, as well as the review process. We really want to review these modules regularly, but as we've developed more and more, it gets harder and harder to have the manpower to regularly review them every year. And what we also found after our first year of annual review is that a lot of them didn't need that much updating, so perhaps we can move to a schedule of maybe every 18 months to 2 years. And the last challenge, of course, is money. These things do cost to create, and budgets are being cut around both federally and state, which are the two sources of funding we get for it, and I don't need to remind any of you about that problem. We're all well aware. So some of the last features that I think make our modules really great are that they have a standard table of contents. So once you've taken one module and you become familiar with how we order things, you understand how all of them are ordered. If you could take our online modules with all their interactivity and turn them into a book, they'd all be very nice, neat chapters in a textbook. They'd all look and feel like they go together, even though they've been written by probably close to hundreds of different people have been involved. We offer choices. If you want to take it online for credit, great. You just want to look up a fact, great. You don't like online and want to use the facilitator's guide, we can do that too. They are competency-based. These topics didn't just come out of thin air. We are really trying to address a public health training need here in Massachusetts. We do such a robust evaluation, and we are looking at individual modules, individual questions, as well as just the general users, who is using them, where are they from. And they're cost effective. Because they're asynchronous, you don't have to do it all in one sitting. You can log in, you can start, you can come back later. They'll still be there for you. We've reduced travel, so you don't need to go anywhere. Just take your computer. And they're free. Who doesn't like free stuff? We have them interactive. Nobody likes, like I said before, nobody wants to stare at a screen. Videos, quizzes, games. We do offer contact hours. Most of our modules offer registered sanitarian and certified health officer in Massachusetts contact hours, though at least two of our modules, wastewater and Title V, as well as tanning facilities, have credits that people in private industry can use as well to maintain their certifications, such as tanning salon owners. We've moved beyond the one instructor, so while we may have to wrangle that one content expert, that one content expert could change. So if someone changes jobs or moves out of state or doesn't want to work with us anymore, so long as we can find someone who knows a lot about bed bugs, we still have our content expert. And we do offer CDs. Believe it or not, there are places in Massachusetts that do not have access to high-speed internet. So the modules, that's probably the big caveat, is you do need high-speed internet really to make them work, especially the interactive components. But by request, we can put it on a CD and mail it to you. The website to be able to get to all of our modules is up there, and I'm available for questions. It's important, however, that I thank my colleagues, especially my co-authors, Jennifer Choi and Kathleen McVarish, as well as the innumerable number of people involved with the local Public Health Institute and the New England Alliance for Public Health Workforce Development, both for the funding to make this work as well as for their content expertise. Thank you. So the question was about what software we use. We develop the modules themselves in SoftChalk, which is a way to just create, it's sort of fancy presentations online, and it offers us the ability to add the interactivity to the modules. And then as far as, did you ask about a learning management system? Did I hear that correctly? We sort of have created our own. We have them up on our website, and we've worked with the university to develop a system to keep track of all the people who apply, who sign up, who take the courses. So, and then we can pull out the data we need both for our own evaluation as well as for the funders' requirements as well. So as far as time, we try to keep most of the modules to be about 2 hours, I think is probably average. There's certain ones, such as food protection, which is significantly longer. It's about 6 hours, but it also is very clear that it's longer. And food protection is a topic that covers a wide range. As far as cost, it's a lot. I don't want to say it's a lot of money, but it just takes a lot of man hours. So depending on who your people are and how long,
if you have a training infrastructure in place with people, aside from that cost, it's probably in the $4,000 to $6,000. SoftChalk license, which each one of us has to get, is about $600 per person.
My boss and my budget person.
Annual review, so we'll be able to cut that out in a while, but Once they're developed, it's not free or maintained, that's for sure, and that's what we have to make sure our funders understand. It's a constant battle.
And the infrastructure, I could just add one, like if the instructional designer and IT person, what's the infrastructure?
Program managers, program directors, and education specialists, computer specialists.
I'd say the core group, it's probably about 6 people make up the core group for most of the modules, and then depending on the number of subject matter experts we involve, it can go up. But I think Kathleen hit it, that it's sort of the program manager, the computer people, the interactivity and education person. And I should also add, we use student power, too.
Another question, yeah.
Were these developed as part of your public health training center, or is this part of your public health training center? I work for the Minnesota Public Health Training Center, I'm curious.
Yeah, so I think the primary on this is probably is the local Public Health Institute of Massachusetts, which is funded through the Massachusetts Department of Public Health, but it's partnered with the New England Alliance for Public Health Workforce, which is one of the 37 HRSA-funded public health training centers. And I think Jen, who's the program manager for the Institute, and I, who was the program manager for the Alliance, work very closely together. I don't know whose column it necessarily goes in, but it wouldn't work without both.
Alicia showed you some of the tools that we use. The elevator speech is one of the tools that we use. So it's an exercise. We try to make our trainings really engaged and active so people can actually practice what we're teaching them. Did I answer your question? Yeah.
In your presentation, when you were talking about you surveyed 95 people in your department, in the Department of Health, you said that 65% had a mentor.
It was a pilot, so to get to our pilot training. So the survey included San Francisco Department of Public Health staff, students, recent grads, and those who are in limbo between school and looking for that public health job, maybe not in the field, but want to get back into the field. So those people are eager to do something about their career, because they were involved and they had the interest. So they probably are already working with mentors because they know that that's one way that they can get the advice they're not getting wherever they are.
So if I can follow up, so that basically you ask, do you have a mentor or something like that?
Yeah.
That could be an informal mentorship relationship with a professor or a college.
It can. So for us, we're not fancy, so we don't have formal or informal. If you feel you have someone who's guiding your path one way or another, that's the focus we're trying to get at, because a lot of people that are coming out of school or currently employed in public health departments, they don't have a formalized mentoring program. So we're trying to see if they are familiar with the concept and if they're getting it somewhere, and we applaud that in any way. When we deal with our early career professionals, a lot of them are their professors or students who may be a couple years older than them or new in the field, and we want that to happen. We would like to definitely develop a formalized mentoring program, but we're a public health department of 8,000 people, and we're trying to get the momentum going so people can see the importance of it, because as we all know, mentoring isn't quite the main priority for large public health departments, but we're really trying to work on that. Well, I mean, so you would like to know how our phases model connects to core competencies, 10 central services, that kind of thing?
How do you set the structure, individual development plan and core competencies, actual development?
So connecting the phases model to individual professional development and kind of where they're going from that and getting it connected to the core competencies. So full transparency, that's a big problem for our public health department. We have to figure out what in our job description is attracting the right people and how we're maintaining them with our performance appraisals. So our phases model is just a pilot phase. So when we talk about our next steps, we want to be able to look at that. Luckily, Alicia's reorg happened before my hospital's reorg, so there's now the Center for Learning and Innovation. So they have been given the green light to actually do a full survey and assessment, needs assessment for our public health workforce. Within that, we'll be able to get more specific tools to start to develop and have the firepower to look at our job descriptions and our evaluations and then work towards more of a structured, formalized program. Ideally, we would like to get this to be part of regular management training, something that's offered as a regular training consistently for the larger staff. We have just a subset of people right now, as well as find a way to possibly enter it into new employee orientation, which is under my purview. Do you need anything else there? Oh, I just have to add, though, that awareness is the first step. It's like AA. So people need to know that they have some ownership. No, but they do. People need to know they have ownership of their professional development. You cannot rely on someone else to say, here's your career path, this is what you're going to do. You have to take ownership of it. And that's what the phases model is for, taking ownership of your career and what you can do in your capacity. And I have to say, I am 31. I've done a lot of things at a very young age, and it's because I took the initiative to do it myself.